Welcome to the Digital Health Transformers podcast series. In this podcast, we explore the dynamic world of healthcare innovation, one conversation at a time. I'm your host, Nicole Guevara, and today we have an inspiring guest at the forefront of transforming the healthcare landscape. Our guest today is a widely recognized healthcare leader. She has various accolades to her name, and she is Irma Rastegayeva. Irma has started her career as a software engineer nearly 30 years ago, working for a medical devices startup and moving on leadership roles at the household brands such as IBM and Google. Additionally, Irma has been a patient advocate for 3 decades, and for the 12 years, she has a community builder and storytelling coach. Recognized among the top 30 women in tech, and the most influential 50 most influential voices in healthcare, she's a repeated health tech and digital health influencer, as well as the chief digital storyteller for her company, Avira Health. Founded in 2017, Avira Health has become a game changer in B2B social media marketing for the health tech world, blending deep technical expertise with creativity and storytelling to boost brands in this fast-moving sector. Based in London, but making her waves globally, Irma and her co-founder, Evan Christel, are fueled by love for health tech, social media, and improving patient experiences. They became a go-to source for startup and big names alike, helping them get noticed, lead conversations, and connect with the right audience through tailored social media strategies. What really sets Avira Health apart is its massive reach. Over 550,000 direct followers and a whopping 30 million organic audience, and an extra 1.5 million followers through their global influencer network. This enables them to make serious noise for their clients, getting an outsized share of voice, sparkling engagements, and driving real results. From converting events and crafting engagement posts to coaching execs on how to tell their story, Avira Health is all about creating content that clicks with the health and tech community, making meaningful connections and shaping the future of health tech together. In today's episode, we'll explore Irma's journey in this space and her understanding and anticipation of the future of healthcare technology. Let's begin by its upcoming tech-driven ideas in healthcare this year. Thank you so much for joining us today, Irma.
Well, thank you so much, Nicole, and thank you for that wonderful introduction. I appreciate the invitation and look forward to the conversation.
I am definitely as well. So before our main topic, can you share more of the transition from a software engineer to a prominent figure in healthcare industry today? What inspired you this shift in your career?
Well, sure, Nicole. Well, I have to say it wasn't just one shift. It was many different shifts, big and small, that led to where I am today. As you said, I did start my career as a software engineer, and I was lucky or destined to start my career in the medical devices, medical software startup. And that was really an amazing journey. I was there for more than 4 years, and just by nature of being in a startup, I got to not only do my main job as a software engineer, but I got to install our systems in hospitals around the world. I got to work with medical physicists and neurosurgeons who were the main users of our product, and got to train them in our product, got to learn from them as to how our software and our medical devices were making a real difference for patients. So I should mention that the software I developed was to treat brain cancer and brain aneurysms through a revolutionary concept at that time that was called radiosurgery. So it was really amazing. It felt great to see direct effects of my own work. And see how that was directly improving and often saving patients' lives. It all was also amazing to be in a very dynamic, great kind of startup environment where everybody was excited and enthusiastic. And so it was just so as I moved on in my career and I worked in increasing software engineering and management roles in different other industries and companies, that feeling of just really being connected to the outcome of your work never left me. So I've as I moved on to other industries, I always knew I kind of wanted to get back to being in healthcare and medicine somehow. And I think for a couple of decades, what played that role for me is being patient advocate. So kind of outside of my professional role, I was a patient advocate for, like as I said, for as you said, for more than 3 decades. So I've kind of been always involved on different sides, so from product development to actually advocating for patients, sometimes bringing that mindset of what technology we can use here to help patients maybe as they navigate the healthcare system. So anyway, so then and as I pivoted to other roles, so I moved away from software engineering and I used, so I have 2 master's degrees. So kind of as I was working, I was getting my second master's in engineering management because I felt that I wanted to take on more and more roles. Instead of just developing software, I wanted to manage projects, I wanted to manage technology. So so that gave me a lot of other opportunities to take on additional work. And then I moved to IBM, I became a managing consultant. So it was a combination of being still technical, but working directly with clients, helping them solve their problems. It was very interesting how, I worked across different industries as a managing consultant. So I got an exposure to kind of see how different industries work. And, as I moved on to Google and yet other combination of roles, technical program manager and technical solutions engineer. So just a really, I guess I kept exploring. I kept just kind of moving in different directions and pivoting a lot from like software engineering, but then making little pivots within different kind of somewhat similar roles. But what happened maybe like 10, 12 years ago, I was just looking for something else I could be doing outside of my kind of technical management professional roles. And that's when I got involved with TEDx. Ended up co-founding TEDx Boston 12 years ago. And that's when I really kind of got passionate and involved in storytelling. So it started with helping curating speakers for the TEDx event and helping them get their story out. And of course, having passion and interest in healthcare and medical technology, I kind of curated more of the speakers kind of in that vein, and then working with them and helping them shape their story was just really, really fascinating. So I think we're getting closer now to kind of like where I am at now at Avira Health and doing marketing and social media, which is not at all what I trained for. It's not at all what my degrees are in, but it's kind of a combination of lived experience and the 20 plus years in product development and 30 years of patient advocacy. Everything is kind of melding together. So maybe I'll stop now and see, what things you want me to do a more deeper dive in.
Absolutely. Thank you for that great background. I completely understand. If you start advising or working for a startup, you tend to wear a lot of hats because there's a small group of people who are doing meaningful things. So you get to tend to do a lot more of the responsibilities in different avenues that you're not an expert on at first, but then you become an
Yes.
expert because you've done it so much. Also love your discussion about being a patient advocate and volunteering. And I think that's great to keep a pulse on the healthcare through the eyes of the patient. So that's absolutely brilliant. And you're just brilliant. You made a career and shifting consistently and making yourself a better professional person by, working for the big names like as IBM and Google, and that's just simply amazing. My next question is, as a digital storyteller for Avira Health, How do you leverage your background in technology to help startups gain visibility in the healthcare industry?
Thank you. So as I mentioned, I have two master's degrees. So one is in software and systems engineering, and the other one is engineering management. So that allowed me to gain a deeper understanding as I started to manage projects and be responsible for some technical decisions. So basically, my background in technology runs deep, right? So I'm able to understand the technology and the design approaches that companies take. So, I feel like I don't need to know every single detail, but I just have that systems approach and that understanding of technology as well as product development and the entire life cycle. So, I can also, and from my perspective of patient advocacy, being kind of on the other side of using some of this technology in healthcare, I can understand how these can apply. So when you talk about helping startups, so I can come in from both storytelling perspective, they're helping them shape their story as to what they're trying to do and why they're doing it, but I can also help them explain technology targeted to the right audience, because often I see entrepreneurs going into too much of a detail, which I understand is a techie, it's exciting, but you have to really target it to your audience. And you talk about kind of breaking into the healthcare industry. I found that the healthcare industry is quite unique and different from a lot of other industries that I worked in. So trust is very important, and certainly I appreciate that, and I think that's important that we trust any technology that tries to help us with our own health, and trust is built on reputation, on storytelling, on kind of past track record. So helping pull all those threads together and helping startups kind of get that message out there. And of course, we work with household brands as well, like Microsoft and 3M Healthcare, for example, which they already have a large footprint, but focusing specifically on B2B social media, there's still so much opportunity to help big brands to connect with their audience, because it's interesting, but people like to connect with people, not so much with the brand itself. And so people are the representatives of the brand. So even if it's if we're advising big brands, it's about how they can tell the story to connect with individual people. And we often advise executives to not be shy, not to hide behind the brand, but also have their own presence as kind of representatives for the brand.
Thank you. I love what you said that executives shouldn't hide behind their office, and that they should represent the brand because I've read articles stating that they trust the brand more if they could put a face into the execs and the stories behind it and the people behind it. So thank you for that. That's definitely very true indeed, and not just healthcare, but in any industry. My next question is, in your experience with Avira Health, what role do you see emerging technologies such as AI, VR, and 5G playing in this shaping the future of digital healthcare?
Absolutely. So in my experience with Avira Health, and also as a patient advocate for more than 3 decades, I have a particular approach to technological advancement. So I want it to bring tangible benefits to patients. As I mentioned, my own experience with a startup that I worked for a while back was just how meaningful it was and how you could really see your work in action. And I also saw the long process that it takes to get medical devices and medical software out into the market. Talking specifically about technologies like AI, 5G, and VR, of course, they're enabling. So 5G enables faster communications, AI enables better productivity, VR enables better medical education, let's say. But I also see these technologies as empowering, especially for the individual on the human level. And as a patient or someone who wants to stay healthy, they might not even be a patient, they're trying to avoid being a patient. So using technologies like wearables, having access to health-related data, drawing insights. So I think it's enabling technologies at the kind of base level, but it's also empowering technologies where now using these, we as individuals can do so much more to address our own health. And maybe first to even just understand before we can address anything and make any changes is to have some data, maybe from wearables like an Apple Watch or from wearables like an Oura Ring that I'm wearing that could help you look at your own data for sleep, for activity. There's continuous glucose monitoring, for example. People can understand kind of how they respond to ingesting carbohydrates, sugars, you know. So we can gain some insights that we didn't have any chance to see before outside of just visiting the doctor every once in a while and maybe getting some guidance and advice. So to me, they're empowering, and that makes me feel even more optimistic about the potential of us being able to have more control over our own health.
Very well said. I love what you said about technology as empowering. So, with the advent of different medical devices and softwares and apps and whatnot, a patient has so much more responsibilities to engage with their health and their well-being. So it's definitely great. Even the Oura Ring, I love that. It's definitely great to see that with the advent of technology, it's making patients more aware of their health and their healthcare needs. My next question to you is, how do you envision integrating disruptive technologies to improve patient care and healthcare delivery?
Well, so of course there is still a disconnect between all this data that is now available to us and some insights we could get and what is actually available to our physicians to take actions beyond our own you know, lifestyle changes, let's say. So you know, if it's a prescription that is needed or some kind of other intervention. And I think the downside of all this data could also be both for the patient, for myself, could be overwhelming because, you know, now you might have access to the data, you might see that something is not quite optimal, but what do you do about it? So it could create anxiety and overwhelm. So that's obviously one of the negatives of this. And then of course, the healthcare system itself right now is quite overloaded. And stretched thin. So I think we have to be careful about just saying, oh, we have all this data now, so let's find ways for doctors to have access to all of this. So I think this is where technologies like AI could come into play to be able to analyze large amounts of data, and then maybe present some insights to the physician. Of course, they can review it and they can. But not to have them do all the analysis of raw data. So I think we need those tools that can integrate some consumer devices like the watches and the rings and continuous glucose monitoring. So something that could gather that data and present it to physicians in a way that is meaningful to them and that allows them to maybe suggest actionable or actions and steps to their patients. So I see that there is a gap there. And I know, of course, companies. There's a lot of people working in this space. The whole health tech, digital health is a huge, huge arena. There's a lot of innovators working on this. So I think we have to see how things shake out and what ends up happening. But I think that's an important, I mean, AI would really play a large role in this. And in fact, even, you know, it's, I don't know if you've had any experience with ChatGPT, but ChatGPT is an amazing tool. You can even put in your own blood work results, or you can put some of these data that you have access to, and it can give you some interesting insights. Obviously, you have to take it with a grain of salt, you know, because this goes beyond Dr. Google in terms of providing insights and drawing conclusions. So you can't 100% trust it, but I think it really prepares you to maybe have a discussion with your physician. You know, you can be more educated on some what you're seeing and then what you might want to discuss and dive deeper and get specific medical, you know, trusted advice from your physician. So I think there is kind of that consumerization aspect of healthcare where you can get more knowledge that can further inform kind of where you want to take your conversation with your physician.
Yes, I like what you said about, you know, every day most healthcare organizations produce thousands and so much hundreds and thousands of data. And it's important to able to encapsulate this into an AI platform that could summarize the data. What also resonated with me is what you said, that there's just so many healthcare companies vying for the solutions for these problems. So it's great to see that health tech is very competitive when it comes to their startups and, you know, producing the best of the items that it's possible for the patients and for the patient outcomes. So I think I'm very excited to see the future of health tech. And I think we're just simply touching the peak of the iceberg and realizing that there's just so much more to see eventually in the future.
Absolutely.
Our next topic is upcoming trends in health tech drive in healthcare space. Considering the rapidly dynamic nature of the healthcare industry, what trends do you anticipate in the tech-driven healthcare space in the upcoming world? I understand that AI took over 2023 in topics. What are the trends that you anticipate in the next coming year?
Yeah, absolutely. So, of course, AI will continue to dominate the news, including its application in healthcare, which I think has a huge, huge potential. So as far as some specific examples of areas where AI could be really, really beneficial for healthcare is in some of the aspects that I've mentioned, kind of being the bridge between maybe a lot of the consumer-driven data and medical insights. But also, you know, there's a huge crisis happening right now in healthcare, workforce crisis. So there is obviously it started with the beginning of the pandemic now 4 years ago, and there is so much burnout among physicians and nurses and other healthcare professionals. A lot of valued professionals are leaving the field. There is a huge crisis of primary care. So there is so much that is needed in terms of healthcare improvements from the workforce side. And so there is opportunity for technology to address some of those shortages. It is obvious, no AI, no bot, no robot can ever replace a physician, can ever replace a nurse. But there is a huge opportunity for these technologies to help augment physicians' work, you know, help physicians with their workload, augment what nurses have to do. There is a huge opportunity to use technology for training of nurses, you know, utilizing remote training, utilizing kind of virtual side-by-side training at bedsides through, you know, remote. sort of technologies allowing access remotely from nurses being trained. So as far as trends, and then there is a huge opportunity, I believe, to use AI in helping physicians when it comes to EHR, EMR, electronic medical records. So we all know when it was developed, a long time ago now, the goal was to improve patient care, to assist physicians, but we now know that completing paperwork and working within the system has added the additional burden on physicians and nurses and other healthcare providers. So we already see studies and we see how AI can be used alongside kind of existing tools to help with responses of providers through the patient portal, for example. And it's amazing, but like AI-assisted tools that provide responses to patients, patients rate them as having more empathy than purely, human-developed responses. And this is not because physicians don't have empathy. I mean, they probably have empathy, in spades, and that's why they went to the profession, but it's just the overload, it's the burden, it's even moral injury that affects physicians' performance. So give them a little bit more room to breathe, giving them some opportunity to use these tools to help them with the mass of paperwork that has to be done. So I think as far as going back to trends, obviously AI will be a key enabling technology, but in terms of its applications, I'd see it in improving workflow, in improving physician burnout, in improving workforce shortages. Obviously, it's a long road. It's not going to happen overnight, but I am positive about the changes that it can bring about.
Yes, that really resonated with me. What you just said about instead of artificial intelligence doing waves and movement, it could be augmenting our current workflows. I think some people throw around the words augmented intelligence versus artificial intelligence, because in the end, it will help us improve and optimize our workflows. And what you also said regarding physician burnout, I read an article that about 40% of physicians wants to either retire or transition to a non-clinical career within year 2030 because the work that's involved with seeing patients and just EHRs, even though it was supposed to help improve workflows, it becomes more of a burden, especially in the administrative side. And for another article that I read mentioned that for a family medical practice doctor, it would take about 28 hours in a day to complete work itself, plus pajama time after seeing patients. So, which is incredible knowing that most physicians went into the workforce to help people and not be, workers of their technology. So I think what you said about all of that really resonated with me. My next question is, how does Avira Health contribute to the growth and development of health tech startups, and what key areas do you think will see significant innovation soon?
At Avira, we do a variety of, we offer a variety of services. We have many different ways that we can help startups. So we're talking specifically about startups now. So I'll highlight some of the work that I do as a storytelling coach. So I've coached startups and entrepreneurs for years now in delivering pitches at, let's say, innovation competitions. I coached many of the people who won awards and monetary awards and a variety of opportunities to be mentored, etc. So that's very personally rewarding to work one-on-one with entrepreneurs to help them craft their story, to target it to a particular audience, to help them kind of draw that why into as a reason why they're doing what they're doing. And then in terms of moving on to the online work that we can do online with social media and specifically B2B social media, there's a lot of opportunity for innovation in that field. It's still called new media. All the social media is still new media. It's not traditional media. And there's opportunity to do a lot within that space. So as you mentioned in the very kind introduction, is what separates Avira Health and distinguishes us is because we have our own huge network of followers. We have more than 550,000 direct followers that Evan and I have amassed over years of being online and developing content and advocating and on social media like LinkedIn and Twitter. So we have that we bring to the startups. So when we help them craft their messages and put their, put themselves onto social media, they have an opportunity to, for the large audience to see what they have to say. And then, of course, we help them craft messages that are also targeted to a particular audience. We help through the use of hashtags and keywords. They can find the right audience for them. But in terms of innovation in how social media is used for marketing and selling, there are a lot of exciting ways. So we've developed a really kind of amazing track record of covering conferences. So giving opportunity for startups who might not even be able to be present at such a huge conference like a HIMSS, for example, or at CES in the growing digital health kind of area. So startups may not have funds to have a booth or even have a little presence in the startup pavilion, but they could still get the share of voice. They can still be seen and heard on social on the HIMSS hashtag, for example, through our skills and abilities to kind of insert them into conversations and have them lead conversations. At times, we can do Twitter chats where they pose interesting questions. They get audience to participate, to contribute their own perspectives. So there is things like that, and we do a lot of live streams. So like you interviewing me now, it's being recorded, and we often interview people kind of live. It just goes out there on all the platforms, and we can do deep dives on their solutions, their services, but also what drives them, what is their vision for healthcare. I guess that's some of the innovations we can use in social media marketing itself.
I love that you actually gave live examples of what you do for your clients in order to improve their image and improve their engagement and their realm of patients or clients. So that's really something amazing, especially for Avira Health. Our next topic is about e-patient engagement trends and more. With the increasing importance of patient engagement, what trends have you observed in e-patient engagements?
That's a great area to cover. Thank you, Nicole, for this question. So while e-patient movement started out of necessity in order to overcome deficiencies with data and information sharing in our healthcare system, I see it as a very positive and growing movement. The welcome trend that I've observed has been an increasing inclusion of patients in the industry, with health tech companies and health systems having patient experience officers and other patient representatives to basically have a seat at the table, so to speak. So I think this movement also taps very much into this whole empowerment. So even though it started out of necessity, but I think it now has this additional positive a sentiment of being empowered. So, and I think maybe years ago, initially, if patients had brought some of their own research or some of their own opinions to discuss with their doctor, that might have been seen as unacceptable, and how can patients contribute to their own health care? But I see this now being seen as a positive, as patients being more involved, more engaged in their own health care. And truth be told, as much as physicians, nurses, everybody really cares and they want better patient outcomes, no one but ourselves as a patient can really, be more involved than us in our own health care. So I think this has to move from more of a passive model where I come in and you do treatments onto me, or you just tell me exactly what to do. I see it more as an kind of active involvement in healthcare. As a patient advocate, as a cancer survivor myself, I think patients need to take center stage in making sure they're getting the best healthcare, the best education, the best opportunities to maintain or regain optimal health.
Yes, very much so. I completely agree with you. I think, when you see a patient or a doctor sees a patient, usually it's like once or twice a year, probably more if you have a chronic condition. But sometimes the old, I guess, belief is that, your doctor only think of that particular patient twice or three times a year. But now patients have round the clock monitoring with their wearables and their medical devices. So it's exciting to see, as your wordings go, is empowerment and active participation in their healthcare needs. How do these trends impact healthcare outcomes? What do you think?
Yeah, that's the most important question, right? Everything has to basically result in improved care. Otherwise, no technology, no changes to the healthcare system make any sense, because we're all just trying to strive for better outcomes. And historically, much too often, it's been patients themselves, the patient advocates, that had to work very hard to overcome the limitations of all the silos that are really entrenched in the healthcare industries, whether it's trying to get medical imaging or other data to another provider for a second opinion, or finding ways to work with many different types of specialists to treat or manage a complex condition. But thankfully, we see so many new developments now. There's centers of excellence being established, and multidisciplinary approaches have become norm in places now when it comes to treating such complex diseases as cancer and diabetes. So that's obviously a positive result that came out of that movement, I believe. And then patients themselves are more educated about their conditions, so more resources are available, as we were talking about before. In addition to being able to Google various things, there is now even more intelligent tools like ChatGPT. And as we talked about, frankly, the physicians, nurses, and the entire healthcare system is really increasingly overwhelmed since the beginning of pandemic, and that hasn't let up, even as pandemic supposedly is over. So it's a little bit difficult to predict exactly how else kind of e-patient movements might improve patient care beyond the ways I've already mentioned. But I think it's just this combination of self-empowerment, having that more data available, but also having more tools that can interpret the data and make this kind of an adjunct to the traditional ways of periodic visits to the doctors. And I see this especially working well in management of chronic conditions, where like remote patient monitoring, more of a continuous monitoring, would be so much more helpful than just this episodic visits with the doctor, especially like when it comes to diabetes or high blood pressure management, etc.
You're absolutely right. I completely agree with you, especially what you said that healthcare sometimes were used to be at least in silos. One department sometimes doesn't talk to another department, or one organization has the same patient with another organization or an insurance organization, and they still don't talk to each other. The patient would still need to call this organization for this organization, and they just don't integrate. So it's definitely great that there are centers of excellence coming out of this, and that they are centered, or is it like patient-centered healthcare, and not, it's advocating to make the patients the center of it all. So I love what you said over there. I completely agree with you.
Possible.
Share with us your views and thoughts on healthcare technology's current state and future state potential.
Of course, there are unique challenges to adoption of new technologies in the healthcare industry. Obviously, it is heavily regulated for good reason, but that naturally slows down any new technology adoption. Another barrier is the workflow. With the overworked physicians, nurses, and staff, basically any technology, no matter how good it is, if it doesn't fit well into an existing workflow, it will not be given a chance. So while the potential for the many exciting technologies like AI, voice, wearables, VRs, and VR, and many others, potential is huge, but they have to be smartly designed, both to deliver good patient experience in terms of, wearability, reliability, etc., ease of use, but they have to be designed to work within current system as well and deployed in ways that will increase chances of wide adoption. And as far as the field, kind of stepping back with the field overall, I think there's going to be a lot of consolidation in the field. We talked about it earlier. There are a lot of competing solutions in the different sub areas of digital health and health tech. So over time, there will be a lot of sifting and consolidation. I hope that only the best solutions will remain. But as I was saying earlier, having the best technology does not always guarantee success. You have to have a lot of other threads come together. Hopefully we can be part of getting some of these solutions, the visibility that they need so that they could kind of move forward.
Yeah, totally. I also resonated me what you said about technologies and consolidation. I agree with you because a lot of startups are doing exact same thing, just a little bit of tweak there and a little tweak there. So it's important to see that overall, there will be some sort of best among best, and we know that they're going to put the patient in the front line. A few things, though, that also came in mind when you were talking about technology and the current trends is there are still some healthcare organizations who purchase softwares or subscribe to softwares, and it's not integrating within their existing softwares. And I think that integration should be highlighted further in the future because, it doesn't cons it's not consistent with their workflow. So I love what you said that technology should put workflows in consideration when they're trying to implement or integrate it with some healthcare organizations.
Yeah, absolutely. Talking about interoperability for how many years now, and it's still very, very far away from being universal.
Yes. Yes, very much so. One of my clients have this exact same problem is, some of their softwares don't talk to each other. So, you put a software on top of a software because this one doesn't talk to this one and this one doesn't talk to the other one. So definitely interoperability. Hopefully we'll get more movement in the next upcoming future. Any advice you would give for an aspiring healthcare entrepreneur to increase their online presence?
Of course. And then maybe first I can talk a little bit more about the importance of storytelling. So I feel that
Absolutely.
storytelling is crucial, especially in healthcare. And I'm very passionate about this industry, in particular about disease prevention, early detection, and improving health outcomes. And there are so many talented and passionate innovators that are working super hard developing the next breakthrough or a significant improvement to what currently exists. But what does it take for this improvement or the important innovation to come to life so it can eventually help patients? Well, it's a very long road, as you I'm very well aware. It takes visibility, it takes funding, effective partnerships, proper resources, the right go-to-market strategy, and so on and so on. But it all starts with visibility. How do you get noticed? How do you keep their attention long enough to spark the interest? I say it's effective storytelling. And when you try to tell a story, don't just talk about technology, focus on the why, not just the how. The vast majority of entrepreneurs I've met are driven by strong passion and commitment that often stems from their own personal experiences with the healthcare system, a particular disease or challenge, either their own or their loved ones. This is valuable information. So, as everyone might have seen on Shark Tank, popular TV program, that the pitch is the opportunity to tell the story. And investors often decide to invest not just so much into the product, but into the entrepreneurs themselves. So moving on to specific tips and guidance for entrepreneurs and how to increase their online presence. Well, I guess we don't have that much time, but because there's a lot of tips and tricks that I could share, but I'm just going to start with a few. I'd say consider these three words when you think of your online presence: value, engagement, and community. So for value, think of your presence on social media from the perspective of delivering value first, not promoting yourself, your product, or company. If you're just getting started or hesitate to share your own point of view through original content, start by sharing something you read, heard, or watched that you found valuable. Chances are many other people will find it valuable as well and might share your post with their audience. Second, engagement. Engage with others on social media. Add a thoughtful comment, provide a link to a relevant resource, share their post. People will start noticing you. And third is community. Social media is a community if you treat it that way. Find communities that you want to be part of through hashtags, lists, groups, etc. And you find, ways to contribute, follow, retweet, comment, and people will reciprocate. And while we all know that consuming social media can take up hours of your time every day, developing your own presence and creating professional content doesn't have to be. There are many tools that can help with this. For example, Buffer makes it super easy to share content you're already consuming online as original posts across your social channels with just a couple of clicks. And the last suggestion I would offer is to optimize your LinkedIn and Twitter account profiles. I'm amazed how many people do not use this as an opportunity to tell the story of who they are and what they do. So have an appropriate photo, use the banner space that you have an opportunity, so use it wisely. Use every character of the allotted headline or bio space in your profile. And perhaps try using ChatGPT to help you craft a succinct narrative with key hashtags and a couple of emojis. And use pinned tweet and featured section on LinkedIn to highlight your most important posts. Basically, give people an opportunity to start to get to know you through your online presence and compel them to be interested in learning more about you and from you. That's what I say.
Wow, I think your advice there is so golden. I love what you said about having value, having engagement and community in everything that you do in social media, especially for the startups or the entrepreneurs out there who's trying to get their name out Thank you so much for those invaluable advice from especially when it comes to storytelling and telling your own story. Very, very particularly appreciated there.
Oh, Nicole,
So
thank you very much. You're welcome. And I love helping entrepreneurs. I love getting people, most seen, heard, and noticed. So we all kind of rowing the boat in the same direction. So thank you.
absolutely. So my last and final question is there a project or a company that you would like to get a shout out to? What are your projects that are you're involved that you want a call to action to? Anything under the sun that you want to talk about, that you want to create an awareness about or anything of that sort? Feel free to tell your audience right now.
Well, thank you for that opportunity. So I'll probably just give shout out to Avira Health, which is my own company that I co-founded many years ago now. So and we work on a daily basis with entrepreneurs and startups and also well-known brands. So if you go on my social media, first of all, I would love people to connect. Find me on LinkedIn, find me on Twitter. I'm at Irma Raste, easy to find. And so you'll always see, as my own pinned tweet or as my featured stories on LinkedIn, you'll see the projects that I'm working on. You'll see some of our client content I'm highlighting. You'll see some of kind of just things that I'm passionate about and I want to draw attention to. So, and that changes over time. So, I'm always highlighting someone and something that is happening. So, maybe, keep an eye out and reach out and engage and we'll see you on social.
Thank you so much, Irma. Well, thank you, Irma, for sharing your insights today. It's been a pleasure to discuss the future of healthcare technology with you. Before we wrap up, we encourage our listeners to connect with Irma on LinkedIn, stay updated with her works and insights. Your engagement with the podcast is valuable, and we look forward to bringing you more information of discussions in the future. Thank you for being a part of our community. And I just want to caveat that this podcast was brought to you by OSB, a leading healthcare software and product development and solutions enhancements company. They have developed solutions for revenue cycle management, practice management, medical billing and coding, advanced tech telehealth, remote patient monitoring, healthcare payment systems, healthcare cloud solutions, EHR development, and so much more. For more information, give us a shout out or a contact through our social media platforms. Again, Irma, it's been a pleasure interviewing you today. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. And thank you, Nicole. And thank you, everyone, for listening.